notice when I lifted his wallet. "Nasty swelling," I said, pocketing that object as I wiped my fingers on the side of my own trousers. "Otherwise, just a graze." Helping the man to his feet, I held him steady as he found his balance. It was a nice touch. "Your name, sir?" The man looked at me. "Sigurdsson," he admitted finally. "Professor Sigurdsson." "Professor?" "An American university in San Francisco, a thoroughly modern institution." He managed to imbue this description with a level of approval which would have been missing had the words come from my mouth. "And your friend?"
"My brother," he corrected.
Had someone told me those two men were picked at random from a thousand such, rounded up off the streets of London, I would have believed him. The idea that they shared the same blood was an altogether stranger proposition. One man was fat and small-eyed, the other tall and beak-nosed, with eyes that belonged to an Ottoman potentate. "Professor Sigurdsson," I said, offering my hand, "pray let me call on you to confirm your recovery." Needless to say, the address given me was as fake as the name. The house in which this man really resided was behind the new railway station. A shiny brass plate by the gate announced it as the residence of Professor Sigurdsson, thinker, and Dr. Sigurdsson, general physician. The screws holding this unlikely announcement were new, but 100 tiny scratches at the four corners spoke of other walls and hurried exits. At least, so Hunter told me when he returned, following them being the task I gave him, while I found a blacksmith to repair the broken rim of our wheel. So, it was entirely my fault the two Sigurdssons had vanished by the time I presented myself at their door. Stripped bare, their rooms echoed to the sound of my search, even the carpets having been spirited away. A very agitated landlady, who had appeared out of breath shortly after I had Hunter break down the door, kept demanding of me what kind of fiends stole everything. "Efficient ones," I told her, although I fear she did not entirely understand my joke. The constable who had accompanied the landlady began to make notes, and, as I listened, her list of items grew longer and ever more valuable. "I'll never get them back," she wailed. "On the contrary," I said, "you can have them this very afternoon with almost no effort." It never ceases to sadden me the things that amaze closed minds. The sun setting over the Hindu Kush, with wild dogs circling the last flames of a fire destined to die before dawn, waves deep enough to swallow St. Paul's in one watery gulp, the innocence of a Nepalese child goddess so beautiful, grown generals cry in her presence. Such things are put on this earth to stun us. To be amazed by anything less seems an insult to intelligence. As I suspected, my comment that her goods would be returned proved enough to silence the landlady, although I then had to explain to the constable that my certainty the carpets could be found at the nearest pawnbroker was more to do with common sense than any intimate, not to say inside, knowledge of the crime. "We must be off," I said. The constable looked as if he might object, but changed his mind at a glance from Hunter, who wore the badge of a Queen's Messenger beneath his coat. There my day might have ended, with an interesting meeting and my giving Inspector Lestrade descriptions of the two rogues and an order that I be notified when they were found. And so it would have ended, if Hunter and I had not proved woefully incapable of paying the blacksmith for his work on the wheel. "Sir?" I fumbled at my pigskin bag in my hand, and then stopped angrily. I am not a man who fumbles. In it I felt a map of the Empire painted onto silk, and my cigars, which actually broke open to reveal sticks of hashish, which the dear Queen herself uses for pain, a little opium, a throwing knife, a set of prayer beads given me by Kais Bey. Everything was where it should be, except my reward for work well done. The bag of gold I'd gone to Windsor to collect. Apparently, while I was first curing our accident victim, the fat little doctor had come to take a look at my carriage. This, it appeared, was not all he took. "Sir?" said the blacksmith. "Here," I replied, impatience winning. With a flick of my wrist, I took the throwing knife and slashed open the pigskin bag.